Shvius Perek Tes Mishnah Beis 9:2. We now begin the topic of biur, which is an obligation, midoraisa, according to most, a Torah obligation, to remove Shemitah produce from one's home in the eighth year at a particular time. And that particular time is based on the fact that the psukim, the verses say that the Shemitah produce is for us to eat. Vaisa Shabbos Arts Lachem La'achla Lacha. It's for you to eat, the food that grew in the foul land, and also for your servants and members of your household. And then the pasuk says, also for your behemas and the chaya in your land. Behemas are domestic animals, and the chaya are the wild animals, asher bartzecha, that are in the land. So the understanding is that it's for all of us, and it will, meaning us and the wild animals, tia kol tvuascha le'echol, it's for all of us to eat its produce. And therefore, the understanding is that when a particular species of produce is no longer available for the animals to forage upon in the wild, so then we have to remove it from our homes as well. There'll be a certain deadline, therefore, that when these particular plants aren't available in the wild, so we have to take them out of our home. Now, what we do when we do biur, the removal from the home, is a major machlokus based on variant texts in Mishnah Ches, Mishnah 8 of our Perek. According to the Rambam, it means to actually now destroy the food. Once the deadline of biur has arrived, whatever this particular species of food is no longer available for the animals, now we must remove it and destroy it from our homes and to consume it after that point. Meaning if the time for biur for grapes has arrived in the eighth year, so now you have to remove the grapes from your home, and it's asur min haTorah, forbidden by the Torah, to consume those grapes at all. That's the Rambam Shita. However, most have a different version of the Mishnah and rule differently, and this is how the halacha in practice is followed, that biur requires removal, but not destruction. So one removes it from his home, and then he declares it as hefker, as ownerless. And at that point, anyone is welcome to claim it. We'll see in the Mishnah there's a machlokas tanaim who can claim it, but in practice, anyone is free to claim it. And anyone includes the person who previously owned that foodstuff 5 minutes ago. So that means a person essentially can do the formality of taking the produce from his home in public, declaring it ownerless. Perhaps he needs to have people witness that he's declaring it ownerless. And then he can simply reclaim what was his and take it back into his house and eat it. And that's how, in fact, the practice is done today in Eretz Yisrael, that once the time of biur comes, one removes it, declares it ownerless, and then in many cases just simply reclaims what had been his all over again. In any case, our Mishnah here, Mishnah Beis, is going to discuss the deadlines, the conceptual deadlines for when the time of biur for each particular species kicks in. Now, if you think about it, there's a problem, a potential problem. The potential problem is that even though, let's say that I'm getting access to my neighbor's fig tree because he's opened the gates to his backyard and says, everyone's welcome to have the figs, which are hefker because the Shemitah here. These are Shemitah figs. So then I go and help myself to the figs and bring some home to my house and leave them in my house. I dry them, whatever it is. At some point, we're going to say that figs are no longer available to the animals, and therefore I have to remove those dried figs from my home. So available for the animals would mean that the figs are still attached to the trees. But the question is, which trees and where? So just because my neighbor's tree ran out of figs, does that mean I have to do biur in my house? Presumably not, because there are other fig trees around. But how far around? Do I consider it my neighborhood, the entire region I'm living in, the whole of Eretz Yisrael? So the Mishnah says there are three zones in Eretz Yisrael. These zones are based, conceptually, they're based on topographical and climatic conditions, you know, the lay of the land and what grows there. But in practice, a great deal of it has to do with simply where Chazal understood different animals forage. That means if animals are foraging in a particular type of foodstuff in a particular region, they're not likely to go to another region. They'll stay in this region and forage in this local habitat. And that being the case, we're going to say there are three basic zones. Tanna Kamma will say three basic zones in Eretz Yisrael. Those zones will be Yehuda. Let's call that southern Israel, although the Eretz Yisrael of Chazal in the Bais Sheni time and the Bais Rishon period for that time also matter. Also, didn't go much past Beer Sheva. So we're not talking about the Negev. We're talking, you know, Jerusalem is more or less, Yerushalayim is more based in the middle of the country, not so far south. But in any case, the southern half of the country-ish, including Yerushalayim, all the way down to Be'er Sheva, etc., that will be called Yehuda. And then there's the northern half, which is the Galil. That's a second zone. So that's Yehuda zone 1, Galil zone 2, and the third zone the Mishnah will speak out is called Eiver HaYarden, which literally means across the Jordan. According to most Rishonim, the Eiver HaYarden zone, it's the east on the other side of the Jordan River, what is today the modern-day country of Jordan or some part thereof. The Bartanura goes like the Rambam here, that Eiver HaYarden actually applies to the west bank of the Jordan River, what is come to be called in the 21st century as the capital W West Bank, meaning the West Bank of the Jordan, in what we call Yehuda Shomron area, as the third zone. So that's a big machlokas, which has very far-reaching ramifications of whether the what we call Jordan today, the country Jordan, meaning the eastern side of the Jordan River, is subject to halachas of Shemitah. In any case, that's the point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to say a lot more, but I think, in fact, to be fair, we won't walk away with too much more than that. Let's walk away with what's perfectly clear, which is we're going to have three separate geographic zones in Eretz Yisrael for the halachas of Shemitah, and when there's no longer of a particular type of cultivated produce in a given zone, I still attach the trees, so then that's the time for beer for that zone. There'll be three different times for beer around the country, for each of the three zones respectively, at which time one must remove that particular food from his home and declare it ownerless. And if he doesn't, it becomes usher from to eat that food thereafter. So that's the point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah will say a bunch of things. First, it'll say that there are these three zones, and then I'll read that inside. It says, Shalosh Aratzos Lebiur. There are three zones in Eretz Yisrael when it comes to the halachas of Biur. Yehuda is the first. I'll call that southern Israel. Eiver HaYarden, we'll call that the east, either on the east or western side of the Jordan River, but literally means across the Jordan. And V'Hagalil, the northern part of Eretz Yisrael. That's clear. Now, the Mishnah will now go on to say that each of those three zones have three sub-zones. There seems to be very little halachic significance of these sub-zones. And we'll see in the next Mishnah there may be some significance in some way, but in short, don't get confused. The sub-zones are relevant for the halachas of Biur, and it seems pretty much to oversimplify, and I'm going to do some oversimplification here because the details just won't make you feel any smarter when we get through them, to be honest, because we're talking about locations on a map and it's not clear what we're referring to anyway, so it's not that, in practice, not so clear. They're basically, each of the three zones will be divided into three sub-zones, and those three sub-zones basically are the highlands, the harim, the lowlands beneath the harim, that's the shvela, and the Amic, the valley. Okay, so each of the three zones have a highland, harim, a lowland, a shvela, and an Amic, a valley, respectively. But those subzones have no significance to the halachas of Biur, according to the Tana here, and that will be the halacha. Now the Mishnah will then go on to say kind of geographic definitions for some of these zones, so you can identify them on a map. It's not clear to us what it's referring to, so I'll just kind of move through it very swiftly. And here's what the Mishnah therefore says. It says, each of the three zones has three subzones. Galil Elyon, Vagalil Tachton, Vaemek. When it comes to the Galil, the first of the three, meaning actually the last three that we listed, but the first three we'll pick up on because it's what we left off of, as the Mishnah does. So the Galil, the Galilee, is divided into three zones: the upper Galilee, Galil Elyon, the lower Galilee, Galil Hatachton, and the Emek, the valley. Now we say, how do we define those zones? Mikfar Chananya Ulamalan, from the village called Kfar Chananya, and up. Up now here means altitude, as we'll see, not north. That is, but they sort of overlap because it gets more, the higher altitude as you go further north. And we define that as Kol She'enu Megadol Shikmin, any part of the Galilee that is too elevated for shikmin, that's shikma, it's translated as sycamore trees, to grow. So you sort of, trees don't grow, trees need oxygen and air, and as the air gets thinner, as you go higher up in altitude, so then trees don't grow. At a certain point, no trees can grow, that's called a timberline, but in any case, the shikma has its cutoff, and its cutoff is somewhere in the Galilee, so once you reach the cutoff altitudes, you're now in the upper Galilee. Galil ha'elyon, Mikfar Chananya v'lamatan. However, the lower Galilee is from Kfar Chananya and lower down. Kol shum gadol shikmin, wherever place that you can grow sycamore trees, that's Galil HaTachton, that will be defined as the lower Galilee. Okay, so we're talking about altitude over here. Utchum Tveria, and the region around Tveria, that's Ha'emek, that's the valley in the Galil, in the Galilee. That's the first three subzones that constitute the Galil. Then Uvi Yehuda, when it comes to Yehuda, the lower southern part of Israel, the second zone that we're dealing with here, it's Hahar, the mountain region, Vashvela, the lowland region, and Va'emek, the valley. In Beit Shemesh, we part of the Shvela, and around here is the Shvela, the lowlands. It's still mountainous, meaning it's still Beit Shemesh area is 400 meters above sea level. And of course, we have, you know, Nesarim and Azekah and all these, you know, larger like mountains, I'll call it, but not as high as Jerusalem, which Yerushalayim is 800 meters above. Va'emek, that's the valley proper, okay, the valley in Yehuda. Now then the Mishnah says, Ushvelas Lud Kishvelas Hadarom. What this is referring to is not perfectly clear. Let's explain it to be a definition of the third area, which is very possible, meaning now we're talking about the Eber HaYarden, and we're saying that the Shvelas Lud, the lowlands of Lud, is Kishvelas Hadarom, has the same status as the lowlands in the south. What those words even mean is not perfectly clear, but if we just assume for a second that we're talking about the third category now of Eva HaYarden, you understand why the Bar Tanur understands that Eva HaYarden, like the Rambam, is on the western side of the Jordan, because Lud, etc., is in the western side of the Jordan. Fine. Others learn that actually that's not what it's referring to. Okay, this is the difficulty of the Mishnah in any case. And then it says, finally, Mi Beis Choron va'ad Hayam, from Beis Choron, wherever that is exactly, until the sea, Medina Achas, that has one status. And many learn, kind of perplexingly, that that's talking about a fourth region, because not clear how this is referring to the previous three, a fourth region, and if it would be a fourth region, it's sort of puzzling why the Mishnah said three zones and not four zones. In any case, we'll leave it with obscurity because it's not clear to me, I don't think it's necessarily clear to anybody, and even if we do get it clear in the words what they mean, it's still the actual implication of that in terms of how the maps are drawn, but still be unclear. So we will leave it at that.